Welcome, everyone, to the Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys, and the producer of the Pistons Pulse. And I'm joined by the Aussie himself, Jack Kelly from Detroit Bad Boys, and Blake Silverman for Detroit Bad Boys, the resident draft expert there. Guys, wait a minute. This feels a little bit different. Jack, help me out.
Does feel a bit different, doesn't it? But I can't put my finger on it. Blake, can you help me out a little bit?
Yeah, guys, and I mean, honestly, I hope I don't have to start talking about the draft too soon here, but the Pin Down is going to be the newest Pistons podcast brought to you by Detroit Bad Boys. After you both guided us through a roller coaster of an off season, we all thought it was time to bring DBB Live to the airwaves as well. So the Pin Down is going to just be DBB Live's new name.
That's right, man. DBB Live is now the Pin Down. A Detroit Pistons podcast. From here on out, Wes and Blake will be bringing you the latest news and views from Pistons land every week at our usual time on YouTube of 6 p.m. Eastern, and also every morning to help you through your morning commute. I will be still here, still around as a very, very, very frequent guest. I've launched my own YouTube channel called Pistons Intellect, which you can go find on YouTube. But yeah, I'm still going to be around a ton to jump on and talk hoops with these guys.
And we wouldn't have it any other way. And we really couldn't be more excited here taking our live show and converting it into a podcast. So to all our DBB Live listeners, like we just said, we'll be having Jack back as often as possible. And, you know, whether you're listening on your morning commute or joining us live, you guys can expect that same reasoned analysis on the topics you guys all want to hear.
Yep, and every week we're going to be taking questions, so send us your questions in on Twitter, the Detroit Bad Boys site, or live right here in the YouTube chat. So the fans really drive this show, and we wouldn't want it any other way.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, guys, listen, the Pistons actually played some real basketball this week. Finally, right? Last night, or a couple of days ago, if you're listening to the podcast version, they ended up going and losing in a nail biter to the Heat. So I want to get the thoughts from both of you guys. Jack, you first. You know, what stood out to you in game one? What were the main takeaways from that, you know, pretty exciting game, honestly?
There's a guy called Cade Cunningham on the floor. That I think you have to start with him. Like, I think it starts with Cade. Like, and you're right, Wes. That was a really fun game, an up and down game. And in terms of Pistons were in it, then they're down 19, not down 15, then they're down by one. Cade's hitting threes in transition. Pistons are in the game. But yeah, it starts with Cade. He had 30 points, 9 assists, 14 of 27 from the field, 4 of 9 from three. He pretty much drove that comeback alongside Isaiah Stewart and Jalen Duren in the fourth quarter. And yeah, he was, I think I tweeted it out, like, the box score was amazing and he played great, but just having him on the floor, his patience, the pace he plays with, the poise, I have missed watching that, and it helps this team so much. It's, yeah, it was really fun to watch. And YouTube users, right, we could talk Cade for an hour. We could easily do that, but it starts with Cade for me.
Yeah. And just on my end, like, I mean, just to go with Cade for a second, like, getting 30 points the hard way, not taking a single free throw, is incredible. There were times where I was watching the game and it just felt like whatever shot Cade was going to put up, it was going down. Like, I didn't even doubt it, really. And it turned out that way for a bit. Other than that, one thing that stuck out to me was just the defense right out of the gate. Asar Thompson getting those handful of blocks immediately in the first quarter. It felt like whenever the Heat were going to the hoop, like, they weren't going to get an easy look. It was most likely going to end up in a shot altered. One other small thing that I love was just Marcus Sasser, and we really got to see his shot last night. I think his first three, and it was the first bucket of his career, it was one he thought about, wasn't really sure if he was going to take it, but then he stepped into it and drained it. I was happy to see him get some minutes and make some shots as well.
Yeah, hey, let's stick with Cade for a second, because I want to talk about his free throws. This was obviously you know, going back 2 years now, this was kind of a problem for him during his rookie year. He really didn't get to the stripe. And honestly, I was impressed quite a bit of his drives. I felt he did get all the way to the rim and he was physical, used his body. So, you know, are you guys thinking this might be a situation where, you know, it's just going to be kind of a war of attrition for him? The more he keeps driving, the more likely he's going to get these calls. Or, you know, maybe he does need to be more aggressive throwing his body and kind of acting it out, right, to entice the ref to make the call. I don't know. Jack, what do you think?
No, Wes, I'm with you. I thought he had some nice drives. I think it's a combination of things. I think one is that part of, like, I don't think Cade probably drives enough. Like, I thought he had some really nice drives, but I think because he's so comfortable in that mid-range and getting to that spot, he settles there. And he made 5 of 5 dribble pull-ups inside the three-point line last night. So if you're making 100% of your shots on dribble pull-ups in mid-range, like, take that shot. But I feel like he could be a bit more aggressive. But I think you're right as well, Wes. I don't think he sells the contact enough. Like, I think he will often, like, sort of yell at the ref, like, say, like, M1 or for the call. But in the play, like, I don't think he sells it enough. And I truly think there is a bit of an art to selling it without it being called a flop. And then the other thing is, I feel like, I mean, I'm sure we might get into this, but that starting lineup that was on the floor to start the game, start of the third quarter, there's just not a lot of spacing. So I feel like it's kind of hard for him to get all the way to the rim at times and put enough pressure maybe on his defender or put more pressure on the rim to try and draw fouls, if that makes sense. But I think it's a combination of things. I'd like to think that throughout the season, a full season of attacking the rim, he'll start to get more respect from the refs. But yeah. We'll see.
I mean, just to build on that with the lineup thing, it's not just the spacing, right, guys? I mean, it's the fact that I talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago now on DPP Live, but, like, he's the only threat out there. You've got him. Obviously, Cade's an offensive threat. He could shoot it. He could put it on the floor. He could get to the rim. He could score at all three levels, and he can pass and play make. But really, you've got Jalen Duren, who's a pure play finisher. And then three guys that are very level of not good at scoring the basketball next to him in Killian Hayes, Asar Thompson, and Isaiah Stewart. And, I mean, obviously it's a little bit of a spectrum there, right? I mean, Isaiah Stewart is almost an okay offensive player. He's not quite there yet, but he is getting closer. But I still wouldn't say that he's a, you know, plus out there on that side of the floor. So, I mean, in the second half, once Cade was hot, you had the Heat double-teaming him. One, every time he turned the corner. And two, when he kept scoring anyway, 40 feet away from the hoop just to get the ball out of his hands. And no one else was making the Heat pay, right? No one else was scoring. Killian couldn't get to the rim. He was pulling up for all those fadeaways at the elbow. Asar, I mean, he tried to drive past Duncan Robinson, but his handle was just too loose and the spacing wasn't good enough anyway, right? He had no shot to do it. So, you know, to me, I think it's a lot about the guys who are out there around him kind of forcing him to, I guess, push the envelope a little bit, right? Like you said, he can't get out of the rim. He does have so much focus on him. He is pulling up for these mid-range jumpers. And they're all the right call. It's just, is he really set up for success with these guys around him? I don't know. What do you think, Blake?
Yeah, one other, like, thing I noticed with Cade and the fouls, and actually shout out to Mark Schindler, who's a great basketball analyst all around, wrote a beautiful piece today about Cade's jab step. We saw it like a ton last night. And what that does, it's like, it's not even quick. It's just like a movement that allows Cade to get the defender in a position that he wants them to be in, which creates more of an open look. But on the other hand, it lends itself to maybe not getting as much contact and getting to the line. I mean, I do think those jab steps really open up Cade's game a lot. Like, they allow defenders to be confused about what he's going to do next, confuse the defender off the jab step, or even just step back and pull up, which we saw him do numerous times yesterday too. So I think it's coming. I think he'll find ways to generate more contact, but just the flow and like the pace that he plays with may not lend itself immediately to just drawing a ton of contact.
Yeah, I'm with you on that flow and pace thing. It like because he's not going to have those sort of explosive drives, that's just not part of his game. I do think that lends him to that sort of slow cadence to the rim. It's hard to draw that excessive contact at times, especially if you're not getting, like, you don't have an explosive, like, vertical leap as well. He's sort of quite slow and methodical in the way he gets there. And he's able to finish because he has such long arms at times. Like, he had a really nice finish over Bam Adebayo. I think it was in the fourth maybe, or in the second half. And he had three or four of those throughout the game. But I think, yeah, I don't think Cade's contact adverse. Like, I feel like he takes contact. It's just not, it's like he's not getting hit hard enough or something for the foul. So I don't know, Wes, where do you end up on the free throw stuff?
I'm just going to kind of wait and see with it. I mean, just to kind of devil's advocate here. I mean, I hear your guys' point. I think it's a good one, right, with the pace of play. But you look at guys, some of the biggest foul drawers in the league are, well, James Harden when he plays and Luka Doncic. And, well, they don't play explosive, right? They also kind of have this wear you down, slow, control the pace of play sort of style. So I think it's well within his skill set to do it. I just don't know if he's really had to do it before. So I'm thinking this might be something that comes along down the pipe. You know, he's still a young guy. He's still developing. This isn't the final version of Cade Cunningham that we're going to see in hopefully a Pistons uniform. So, I'm not too worried about it yet, but... You know, I think it is definitely something that's worth monitoring.
Can I ask one question? Do you guys think the refs are missing any calls? Because me, honestly, like, I didn't see any no calls on Cade last night. Like, I don't think there was, maybe someone can find one instant, but I don't think there was any glaring ones where he got fouled that didn't get called. So I see sometimes that's where the path people go down, but
there wasn't anything glaring that I really noticed. I think it's more... I mean, they were in Miami, like maybe there was a bit of a home whistle, but I don't think it was glaring to any degree. And like we've been saying, I really think it's just an area of his game that's going to grow. And like realizing you're getting up 27 shots, but not going to the line once, like maybe there is some sort of minor adjustment that he can take upon himself. He can't control whether he gets the whistle or not, but, maybe there's something there that we'll see develop over the season.
One last thing here before we get on to some questions. Jack, I can't not bring this up.
For sure.
That's your guy. You see Andre Drummond make Steele go down court and cross up at home.
I retweeted it and then tweeted the... I did. I saw it. I retweeted it and then posted the video immediately. So shout out to Mr. Jones. I did see it. I don't know if it was a legit crossover. It looked like Chet sort of lost his footing backpedaling, but we'll take it. Point Andre Drummond, all those summers spent at UCLA in the Rico runs.
Finally paying off in a Bulls
coming
uniform,
to fruition.
Right? All right. One last thing here before we actually get into the question. Sorry, I lied. We had one more thing. Wanted to talk one last time about the rookies, right? I mean, Asar Thompson, he looked like rookie, but he looked good, right? And obviously we brought up Sasser earlier. You know, his shot was falling. I thought he looked pretty good on the defensive end. He was assertive. I thought it was a pretty good showing from both the rookies. Jack, why don't you quickly just break down, you know, what you saw from them and if you think it can kind of be sustainable moving forward.
So, yeah, Asar, I think, finished with like 4.7 rebounds, few assists and those five blocks. And he hit the three-pointer. And then I think on offense, he had a couple of turnovers. You mentioned one earlier, Westbrook tried to drive into the middle of the floor and sort of lost the ball. He didn't really have many of those like cuts and sort of connective plays on offense, but like it's his first game, the ability for him just to fly out of nowhere and block a shot is going to be so valuable at like the wing position. There was a play actually where Cade had a chase down block and then Jimmy Butler pump faked, I think he pump faked Asar, and then Jalen Duren came and pinned that one off the glass. I say that because I just feel like all these 7 foot wingspan guys flying around. You can kind of see the vision here, although there's plenty of questions. I think Asar fits into that vision perfectly in terms of like the defensive disruptiveness. But yeah, it's his first game, 1 of 7 from the field. You'd like to see him get a couple of layups in transition or something. But he didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. So that's something to monitor. I think Alec Burks and Jaden played a few minutes, and I guess Killian closed as well. So that's something to monitor, how many fourth quarter minutes he plays. But I thought it was a pretty solid debut from Asar. And then Marcus Sasse, you know how I feel about him. Blake alluded to it. He hit some big shots. So, yeah, I love watching him play basketball.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, with Asar, like with him starting, I really like that he's not going to have a huge burden on his shoulders to put up huge scoring numbers right out of the gate. Like, I think, like we saw last night, we're going to see him impact the game and plenty of other ways. And having someone like him on the wing who can rebound the ball, especially on the offensive end, I think is something that this team hasn't had and is going to be a huge benefit. And I guess both with Asar and Sasser, like I had a thought after the game. I was like, I kind of wish Sasser was out there for the last shot. Like, I understood why he wasn't, and put the veterans in, but like, I just hope both of them get to that point fairly quickly where we put them in those situations, whether it's Asar running the rim to try and get a tip in or having Sasser as the guy open on the wing for the last shot. He specifically showed the ability, like he did all throughout college, that he can knock down those shots. NBA range isn't going to be a problem for him. So I think that's one like growth thing with them, just eventually getting them comfortable in clutch time situations.
Love it. I'm with you guys. And I think, honestly, I wish Sasser played more. I mean, he had a great night. The shot was going in. And I thought, you know, even with the ball in his hands, he was pretty assertive. I think he did have a couple turnovers getting downhill driving to the hoop. But, you know, I mean, you're going to live with that with a rookie guard like he is. So all things considered, he played really well. I thought he was a positive on the defensive end, which, you know, this team needs guard defenders. Absolutely. So if he can fill that role moving forward and be a good shooter, like, yeah, I think he might really force his way into the rotation. And then on the other hand, right, with Asar Thompson, you know, with what you guys were saying on offense, I 100% agree. I think the biggest thing for him moving forward is just not to be a nothing, you know, on the offensive end of the floor, because he is such a positive on defense and he does pass the ball well and he can grab and go on defensive rebounds and get out in transition. Like, if he can just be a threat on the offensive side of the ball, I think things are going to turn out all right. You know, basically he just can't be Stanley Johnson out there, to call back to former Piston legend. But, you know, even last night, I thought he was a threat, at least insofar as the Heat paid attention to him. You know, I mean, they did sag off him from three, but no one was leaving him entirely, if that makes sense. Like, they were aware of where Asar Thompson was, if nothing else, to get a body on him on the offensive glass. So if he can just keep that up, I think that's going to be a pretty big win for him with the type of defense, you know, that he can bring. So, hey, we're about to jump to questions. Jack, I know you got to run. Why don't you plug one more time your YouTube channel and we'll get on with the show.
I appreciate it, Wes. Yeah, you can look up Pistons Intellect on YouTube. It should come up. It's at Pistons _Intellect on YouTube if you can't find it. But yeah, super, super excited for you guys, man. I couldn't be more excited to have Blake sort of take over the reins as co-host. He's one of the smartest basketball minds, like, honestly, especially with the NBA draft, covers the WNBA. I think he's going to be an awesome addition to the show full time. And then to my man, Wes, as well. I can't wait to see you grow as the running the ship. It's really cool to see you guys doing this. And I can't wait to be on. I plan to come on every week. So I'm going to try and get on you every week, but no, I really appreciate and excited for you too, and to support the show. So make sure you like the show, guys, subscribe and support these two because they're awesome Piston minds.
Yeah. And Jack, hey, everyone, make sure we're following Piston's intellect and watching all the great work that he's going to be putting up on that channel. So Jack, thanks for joining, man. Appreciate you. Thanks for getting through the off season with me. It was a roller coaster.
Hey, it was a grind, but it was fun, Aspen. Love talking. All right, catch you guys.
Thanks, Jack. Talk to you soon.
All right. All right, Blake, let's hop on into some of these questions here. So we got our guy, Camille, first. Do you think there will be matches where we use Joe Harris more? Wish we had him in DFS. Dorian Finney-Smith or Royce O'Neal.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a weird Joe Harris game. Like, I definitely thought he would be use more. I think these rotations definitely aren't final, especially with the injuries that we're seeing. Like, I could even see him being like plugged in with the starting group at times. I don't know if he'll necessarily start the game, but just to provide some of that like shooting and floor spacing, I think there's a role for him. Like, he's proved in this league that he can provide scoring and shooting, which, I mean, we all saw was our glaring thing. We need to put shooters around Cade yesterday. So I think there's definitely an opportunity for him to maybe start some games, but at least be included in the rotation more.
Yeah, you know, I think he is going to stick around. You know, I mean, I think you're right. They need shooting. They really need shooting right now. You look at that starting five they put out on the floor, there's a good argument that either Cade Cunningham or Isaiah Stewart was the best shooter out there. And that is not a great spot to be in, at least with what we've seen from Cade shooting the ball from his rookie season and into his the 12 games he got in year two. So I think you're right. Joe Harris is going to play, but you know, I've been saying he's going to play since they acquired him. They absolutely need guys that can space the floor. Now, that being said, I mean, it was a very quiet Joe Harris game in Miami. By and large, he was kind of getting cardio out there. He was running up to his spots there in the corner around the wing and not doing all that much else. You know, it didn't look like he was even crashing the boards for offensive rebounds all that much. I don't know if he needs some more plays ran for him or if guys are still getting comfortable getting him the ball. But we know one thing that he can do, and he can shoot the cover off the ball, right? He can shoot. And again, go look at how the team shot from three on Wednesday night. They need guys like Joe Harris to be out there for nothing else other than to take some attention away from Cade Cunningham. So, you know, I'm thinking moving forwards, Joe Harris is going to play more. I think Alec Burks is probably going to get featured more. Hopefully Bojan, when he gets back, he's going to, you know, hop right into that starting lineup and be a floor spacer, you know, off the jump. I think, you know, that's why I wanted Marcus Sasser actually to play more. So, you know, I kind of want to pivot this into a lineup discussion. I mean, are you comfortable with the starting five that they threw out there with the rotation that Monty went with in game one?
Yeah, I mean, The one spot that we're not sure about is the Killian Hayes spot, I think. Like, would we put Ivy in there? But, I mean, honestly, it was a struggle for both Killian and Ivy. I mean, Killian looked all right other than from three, but I personally would slot Alec Burks in there while we're waiting for Bojan to return. I mean, I just think we need some sort of additional shooting around Cade, because like you said, when Isaiah Stewart's the best shooter around him, it's not a way to win basketball games. So personally, I would put Burks in for the time being in the Hayes spot, and then when Bojan's back, just play like Asar down. So hopefully that'll alleviate some of that shooting concern, but that's really like the only nitpick I can have with the starting five from last night. What do you think?
Well, you know, I thought Isaiah Stewart played a heck of a game, right? I mean, what did he end up with? 14 rebounds? That's insane out of a guy that, you know, did play the four. Not only nominal, right? He played the role of a four. You saw him actually dribble and drive a few times. You saw him spacing out onto the perimeter a lot and crashing down when it came to trying to get rebounds. You know, a lot of times even I noticed he was split out on Jimmy Butler on the defensive end. Like, he really did play as a four positionally, not just a five kind of spreading out away from the hoop. So, you know, he played great. All offseason, I've kind of been in the idea that maybe he shouldn't be starting. But listen, if he's going to play like this and he's going to be that physical and shoot the ball that well and rebound that well right next to Durant, I think that's a really valuable piece. So, yeah, the question really comes down to that Killian Hayes spot next to Cade Cunningham, or honestly, a Sarge spot as well. I think I would personally value that wing defense he can bring above almost anything else at the moment. You know, when you're playing a team like Boston, who on this roster other than Asar Thompson are you comfortable throwing at Jason Tatum? Like, I'm not saying Asar Thompson's going to win that matchup. I don't think he's got a shot, but he's the best chance they have. You know what I mean? Right. So I think Asar has got to be a lock. It kind of comes down to Killian. And you know, I've mentioned this before, but the thing with Killian Hayes is that while he's a pretty good defender, he's not Marcus Smart. You know, he's not a good enough defender to excuse him being a non-factor on offense, which is why last season him trying to develop that mid-range game was so important. Like, he needs to do something on that end of the floor. But when he doesn't, and you get nights like last night, then, you know, what's he really doing out there? He's not good enough as an impact defender to make up for the lack of offense and the problem with the spacing and the driving lanes and everything else that happens on that side of the floor. So I'm with you. I would like to see Alec Burks out there. I'd like to see Joe Harris out there. Like, you could throw Marcus Sasser out there if you really want a defensive option. I'd be okay with that as well. Like, I think that spot's going to have to change. I'm going to remain open to it. You know, I mean, it was just game one, and Monty's been talking very positively. The beat writers too. Everyone's been talking really positively about Killian Hayes coming out of training camp in the preseason. I haven't seen it yet. I didn't really see it in the preseason. I thought he still looked pretty much like he did last year, but you know, there was so much positive momentum. Maybe we just got to give him a chance. So I'm open to it. I'll just say I'm not excited.
Yeah, and to be fair, I do think that Killian's start was more of like a plug-and-play thing to just see how Jaden Ivey coming off the bench would work. Like, I think if there's one thing that told me, it the idea of Ivey being the first man off the bench is like real, and we want to see how that works. But moving forward, like, if Ivey plays like he should be a starter, he can be plugged in. And initially, before this whole Ivy off the bench thing came to mind, like, I was with you. I was almost thinking Isaiah Stewart would be that first man off the bench. So I would be fine like playing with either of those, and really either like Stewart or Ivy coming off the bench. I don't think it's any like a huge deal. Like, I would see either of them as almost that sixth starter. Like, they're probably going to play 25, 30 minutes a game and really be in there. And if anyone has to miss time, then one of them can easily be slotted in and shift everyone over. And it's more of a seamless transition if you don't have someone like that that's really the first one off the bench, leader of the second unit.
Absolutely. Well, all right. You know, let's get right into Jaden Ivey here. We got another question here from our guy, YouTube user. Why in God's name did they play Killian Hayes twice the minutes as Jaden Ivey? And he goes on to say, am I the only one who thinks Killian's defense was average at best? No, you're not the only one. And contributed basically nothing on offense. So, Killian Hayes over Jaden Ivey. Why? Give us the reasoning, Blake.
I mean, I think they both struggled yesterday, and I think there was a point in the game, like, it never turned super serious, but I think Ivy came in and like picked up a couple quick fouls. Like, there was a point where he was in some sort of foul trouble, and like, other than that, he just like couldn't really get it going. So I don't know. I am surprised seeing that Ivy only played 17 minutes compared to Killian's 30. I think it's more of just keeping that starting group together and playing Ivy mainly as like the man in the second unit. I would be pretty surprised if we don't see that like minute distribution for Ivy go up. And then just with Killian, like, yeah, there were a lot of things he did bad, like specifically 0 for 6 from 3. Like that's not good, but he was effective from inside the perimeter. So at least he provided that. Definitely we can have some improvement on defense as well. I don't think he was like a total loss out there, but you have to hope that the shot from three is going to improve at some point.
I agree. I mean, to your point with Jaden Ivey, it's not like he played a phenomenal game on Wednesday night. He struggled. He was in foul trouble. He looked like he was forcing it quite a bit on offense. He went back to this thing that he did as a rookie early on in that season, where he'd get the ball and he'd hesitate, literally do a hesitation dribble 3 or 4 times before ultimately making a move. And last night, when he made that move, more or less, you know, I agreed with almost everyone that he did. It was just so late that it was no longer the right decision to do it, right? So he's overanalyzing things. He's forcing things. Something's going on with Jaden Ivey between the ears. And that's okay. He's a young guy. He's going to have to work through it. So the way I'm looking at it right now, YouTube users, just, you know, it's kind of a chicken or an egg situation. Was Jaden Ivey slated to get 30 minutes on Wednesday night, but didn't because he played poorly? Or was he really only slated for about 20? And we're going to see this kind of trend continue until, you know, Monty Williams is comfortable with whatever's going on in practice. I don't know. And the worst part about it is we're not going to know until either Jaden Ivey has a fantastic game but only plays 17 minutes, or he plays an awful game but plays 30. So I don't know how this is going to end. I don't know where this is going to go. But, you know, it's really hard to justify saying that he needed to play more on Wednesday night. And that's what's given me trouble, because I really like Jaden Ivey. I think he's got the potential to be a fantastic player. But I can't say that he earned those minutes that he even got. Like, that wasn't a great game from him. I don't know. Talk me off the ledge.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, I do think that Monty is going to try different things. Like, I mean, like you said, I don't really know if Ivy coming off the bench is an experiment or it's really, like, something he envisions for the long haul. But either way, I think we're going to see different starting groups, especially while we're dealing with some injuries. So, yeah, like you said, Ivy didn't play great. I am hoping he can at least find a way to get it going, because he's going to have the ball in his hand. So if he can find a way to make a few shots drop, I would be pretty surprised if we didn't see his minute just distribution go up. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later, but we'll have to see.
You know, this is something too. DJ Griffin here brings up that Monty rode the hot hands last night. And, you know, he did. You know, that was something I noticed. And I'm not sure if, you know, I'm just misremembering, but I don't really seem to remember Dwayne Casey doing this as much. It felt more like his rotations were kind of set in stone, more or less. I mean, there was obviously flexibility in there. We're talking about NBA games, but it did really feel like Monty Williams kind of rode the groups that were playing well at the times that they were playing, which, you know, honestly, I'm pretty comfortable with that. I think that's probably the way to go about it. But at the same time, you know, you're going to end up with games like this. If you do that a lot, you're going to end up with games where Jaden Ivey's at 17 and Killian's at, you know, 30, just because the group that they were in with at that time ended up playing better for whatever reason.
But like we saw with Asar Thompson, who didn't get any fourth quarter minutes, I think that was really because of the offense. Like, you definitely want him out there with his defensive ability. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, like, what I really want with this young group is for them to just prove that they deserve to play in clutch time. Like, I want to see that from Assar. I want to see that from Sasser to a degree. I don't know if Sasser is going to have as much of an opportunity to do that. But eventually, I really hope that those younger guys will show an ability so Monty trusts them to be in for the final shot or the final possession.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they will, you know, get there, at least the way they're progressing. So, all right, let's move on to the next one here. Our guy again, DJ Griffin, asking thoughts on Bagley. Thought he played pretty well in his minutes last night.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can't really talk about Bagley without talking about Wiseman. Like, I mean, it's, I guess it's clear where that battle is, but Bagley definitely has shown more of, like, versatility than Wiseman. So it seems like he won the battle. And I mean, he looked all right when he was out there. I think he's definitely going to be a serviceable backup big. I was a little surprised that Wiseman didn't get in for any minutes. But if Bagley can come in and like do what he does, or if he comes in and struggles, maybe that's where Wiseman slips in. But I liked what I saw from Bagley last night. I mean, it wasn't overpowering or anything that like super stuck out to me, but I think he can fill that backup big role in a nice way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, our guy, TBB, Brady Fredrickson, he brought up on Twitter the other night, just that Marvin Bagley, just every now and then, for all of his faults, he just decides that he's going to score. And, like, no one can stop him from doing it. That's just what he's going to do. And for whatever reason, he doesn't do that all the time, which I really wish he would, because I do kind of have a soft spot for him. But he does. He has that trait. He's a good offensive big man, especially as a backup. And you can say that pretty definitively about him. For all the rest of his faults on the defensive end of the floor, you know that you could get some pretty efficient buckets and some passable rebounding out of Marvin Bagley. And at this point, both Bagley and Wiseman are just not good defenders, like, at all. Okay, you can say that as a blanket statement. So is James Wiseman a better and more efficient scorer than Marvin Bagley? No, he's not. You know, is he a better passer? No, definitely not. Is he a better rebounder? Maybe. Maybe he's got an argument there. I don't think it's definitive one way or the other. And QT, you're right. I mean, he had three assists last night. So, you know, overall, really good night. Really good night for Marvin Bagley. I thought there were stretches where he looked better than Jalen Duren, even. You know, I thought through most of the first half, Duren really struggled with being passive, you know, after he got those early fouls. So, yeah, you know, I think at this point, until he loses the spot or until he gets hurt, you're probably looking at Bagley as a fixture in the rotation. And, you know, honestly, that's probably a good thing with where the roster is right now. I bet he's the best option for it. He's certainly playing like it.
100%. And, yeah, the last thing I guess I'll say on the backup big battle, sort of relating to how Bagley is a pretty solid passer for the position he plays. Like, I think I heard this from Zach Lowe. He mentioned that Wiseman had like twice as many turnovers compared to assists in his 24-25 games as a Piston, which is really hard to do when you are not expected to pass the ball at all. So I think that's another thing with him. And if Bagley can make things happen and just be a better passer and scorer than James Wiseman, I think he looked good and deserves the minutes.
Blake, this is what the people want to know. Robbie Sill, is Marvin Bagley going to be a starter?
Actually, I think this might be my dad. So if it is, shout out to you, Dad. I appreciate the support, but I am going to say flat out no. Like, there's not a way he starts on this team. I don't see, like, from the minutes he had last night, like, my thought was just serviceable backup big and nothing more. And if that's his role, that's okay. Was it what anyone thought it would be when he was picked number two overall? No, but that's okay.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you want to bring up our guy here, Camille. We're going to get to your question in a second, but that Sadiq Bey trade, right? He's saying the Sadiq Bey trade looks a lot sadder now that Wiseman's out of the rotation. And, you know, I get it. I do get it. Basically, they had an option. They could have moved Sadiq Bey for 4 second-round picks or taken a flyer on a guy in James Wiseman, who the GM and certainly a lot of other people around the NBA thought had a really high-level potential, right? I mean, he was drafted number two overall. So, you know, I get rather, you know, preferring those 4 second-round picks at this point, especially the way that it's seemed to have turned out. And especially with the new CBA, right?
What I was going to say about, and this is more about Sadiq than Wiseman, but like, I think that we were just thinking towards the future. Like, we have 3 first-round picks from that class. Like, we're going to have to pay Cade next year. Like, and Atlanta made a decision. Like, they extended Okongwu last week when it came to that deadline. Like, Sadiq was extension eligible. I think they had a very serious conversation on, like, we can pay one of these guys comfortably, and who's it going to be? Like, Okongwu looks like the guy there, hope maybe after Capella. And Sadiq is like, he was a great 3-point shooter for us. But we weren't sure about the defense. And like you said, Wes, like, if we're not fully sold on Sadiq, I'm fine taking a flyer on a guy like Wiseman, which I don't know. Like, I'm rooting for Sadiq and he looked good last night, but I think we just didn't know how he fit in. And Atlanta might be having that same conversation on their side right now, too.
Absolutely. So, let's get on to Camille's question here. He asks, what are your thoughts about a 4-guard and then Bagley lineup?
Oh, man. Well, hopefully they can score. And as long as there's some shooters out there. I mean, hey, I'm all for seeing, like, just wild lineups. Like, I mean, I think that the first, like, 10, 15 games when we're waiting for, like, Bojan and Monty Morris back from injury, like, I think we need to try new things. Like, I don't know if that's something we'll ever see, but it sounds fun. Like, I'm down for it. What do you think, Wes?
I don't know about 4 guards. I paused there at the 4 guards. I get the idea. I like the all offense type of lineup that you're going to inevitably get, right, when you stick Marvin Bagley out there. So, like, if you're going to throw out, you know, a Cade, Burks, you know, maybe Sasser, and then a Sar instead of a 4th guard to go next to Bagley, I think that could really work. I mean, Asar Thompson is roughly the type of player that you could put next to a guy like Marvin Bagley and have it turn out all right on the defensive end of the floor. Because, you know, Marvin's weaknesses is he's not a great shot blocker. He's not a physical presence down low. With what Asar Thompson can do on the weak side as a shot blocker, it does cover up for a lot of those issues. And, you know, just being an eraser behind on the back line that Bagley's not, right? So I think I'd be more comfortable doing that. But ultimately, I'm just not sure you can get away with how likely not physical that lineup would be on defense because of largely Marvin Bagley not being a very physical post defender or even switchable post defender. He's just not a good defender. So yeah, you know, I don't think the 4 guards would work. I like the idea though. So I would stick Asar next to him and then try to run all offense, and I think that could actually be a lot of fun.
If you put Asar in there, that becomes a very fun lob threat lineup.
Yeah, exactly. And that is something I really want to see more moving forward of Asar Thompson in that role. I think he could be a really good, obviously, role man, but even out of the short role. Like, I think there's a lot of fun and creativity you could do with Asar Thompson, not with the ball in his hands, but even as a screener. And I'm really hoping that they do, you know, kind of dive into it moving forward. So next one here from our guy again, DJ Griffin. Thanks for all the questions, man. Appreciate it. And hey, ever moving forwards, we will be putting out the call for mailbag questions ahead of time. You could probably look for that on Mondays or Tuesdays every week. So if you're listening to the podcast, feel free to send those in on the DBB article that we'll put out, or just message Blake or I on Twitter, and we'll get these into our queue as well every week. But our guy DJ Griffin, he asks, with all the injuries, why haven't the Pistons added a 15th man? Signing a guy to a minimum deal that could easily be later cut would not hinder the team's flexibility.
Yeah, and this is an interesting one. Like, Wes, you and I talked about this on Twitter, but after the Pistons signed Stanley Amudi to that two-way contract, he's their third guy under a two-way. And with the league rules, there's some like nuance where either if you don't have a full roster, your two-way guys can only suit up for like a certain number of games combined. So not filling that final roster spot actually like hinders the team's flexibility even more in that sense. Like if you're in a pinch and need to throw some two-way guys on the court, the only like logical explanation I can make for it is they're just trying to keep some roster flexibility in terms of a trade. I'm not really sure what the trade would be to bring in more players than you send out. In my mind, it would have to be like a salary dump kind of scenario, but maybe we'll see them make a signing. But with that open roster spot, I feel like it's just more likely for trade flexibility if there's something that Troy Weaver wants to make happen.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And I'm really glad you explained the third two-way thing, right? Because I misunderstood it. I thought that it was just a blanket. No, you don't have access to that third slot without the 15th guy on the roster. And that was wrong, right? So it's a disincentivizing situation from the league where they're limiting the number of games played, right? Like you said. So why they haven't signed that 15th guy yet, you know, they're not hurting badly enough on the injury front where it's made a big deal at the moment. You know, I don't think that if they went out and signed somebody tomorrow that, you know, they would then suit up and play, you know, against the Bulls for the home opener, for example, right? So they're not at that point yet. And if they did ever get to that point, they can go the 10-day contract route. Like, they don't necessarily have to get a guy on a minimum. So I think you're right. The reason they probably haven't yet is to set up flexibility on the roster for a trade. When you look at the salaries that are on the team, there's one fairly big one in Bojan. And then there's a lot of guys that are kind of in no man's land where it'd be tough to match deals that are bigger without taking more cash back, if that makes sense. You know, once a guy kind of gets over that 27-ish threshold in terms of salary, in my opinion, it does get a little bit tougher to just one-to-one or two-to-one match guys. So I do think they are probably, you know, biding some time, seeing if maybe they could get closer to the deadline, make a move potentially for, you know, a power forward, as we're seeing in the chat right now. But something along those lines, maybe a guy with a bigger contract, a vet, you know, later into his 20s, something along those lines. I wonder if that's where they're going with
it. Yeah, and just like I saw DJ commented on what's the advantage on keeping that roster spot open. Like, I don't really know if there is one other than just like flexibility to sign someone or make a move later on. I mean, I guess what it said, like maybe Troy and Monty had a conversation that it's going to be a 10-man rotation. Like we're not going to need this like 15th guy off the bench unless dire scenarios come up. So maybe that's why Troy is keeping it open, to just cater towards like Monty's plan, but also in his own mind, just keep that flexibility open. I'm definitely interested to see what they're going to do with it. And like, especially with that two-way thing, like I could only find one, I think it was Hoops Rumors who explained the whole like game limit with the two-way guys. Like there might be some other limits incentivizing teams to fill that roster spot that like I'm not aware of. So it may be in the Pistons' best interest to sign someone if that is the case.
I'm not sure outside of the trade flexibility what really advantage there is by not having the 15th guy. But, you know, at the same time, if the guy's not going to play and you have three two-way guys and you do have a local G League team, how valuable is that 15th guy right now anyway? You know, like I'm not sure there's really a strong incentive either way at the moment for the Pistons. So yeah, I'm really curious to see how this one plays out. I'm not sure which way it's going to go, but they definitely have wanted to remain flexible. So, you know, we'll see how it turns out. But our guy again, Robbie Sill, asking, does Marcus Sasser have the size to defend in the NBA? What do you think?
So, I mean, the one thing, even like coming up through the draft process, really like the only, I guess, like con you could find is the size concerns. Like, I think it's a real concern, but that said, like he was a phenomenal defender at Houston. And I know like he's one of those guys that like has that dog in him, as the kids say. So I am excited to see him like match up with guards that are bigger than him. I mean, I think he's shown an ability to guard up based on his size. Like it's different in the NBA. I think he looked good last night, so I'm excited to see him like try more things and guard different guys. I think he can definitely do it, but I think that's going to be the biggest challenge with him.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it was brought up in the chat. He does have a plus wingspan, so that does help him when he's trying to guard up. I think the thing with the size is it's more of a cap on how good a defender he can be rather than a limiting like factor in terms of he can't be a good defender, if that qualification makes sense. So, you know, I think if you go back even in Pistons history, right, look at a guy like Lindsey Hunter or back then Mike James too. These guys were good defenders, but they weren't game-changing defenders. Right, your game-changing defenders these days that are your Kawhi Leonards, or even a guy like Jonathan Isaac, as we saw in Game One there for Orlando. I don't think Sasser's got any hope of being that type of guy, but I think he can still be a very good guard defender at either spot, despite the lack of size. I mean, he's shown it. Like you said, he showed it in college. He showed it Wednesday night against the Heat that he could do it. He was a positive, I thought, almost for sure, out there on the floor on that end. So, yeah, I mean, I think he could do it. He's definitely shown that he has the potential to do it, and he's already done it once. I think that's just going to continue. But, you know, I wouldn't be looking for him to become the next Marcus Smart or anything, right? Or even the next Pat Beverly. Like, Pat Beverly, I'm pretty sure, has 3 inches on him. Like, that's not going to happen. But he's going to be a good defender, I think. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like you said, I mean, it's hard for anyone at his size. But, like, I think he has as many of the tools as possible to be a positive defender, even with the size concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Guys, last question here, then we're probably going to wrap it on up. So this is from Daniel D. Thanks for sending these all in, by the way. We really appreciate it. You guys drive the show. So, Daniel D., what are your thoughts on Isaiah Stewart playing with his back to the basket at the four? And I think specifically, too, we can kind of rope this into those high-low actions that Monty Williams has already kind of shown a proclivity to call with Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah, and Daniel, thank you for bringing this up, because I had to mention, like, before we logged off, even if we didn't talk about Isaiah Stewart, like the first basket of the season being him working down low and then giving Kevin Love the two small immediately, like 20 seconds into the season, was so good. Like, oh man. But Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting, especially with his whole like 3-point shooting, hitting on 2 for 3 last night. I like Cade was looking for him, and I think both him and Duren, like being down there, having like different defenders, especially when you're going up against a team like Miami, when you're playing a all NBA defender like Bam Adebayo, who's mainly focused on Duren. Like if Stu can take advantage of the other guys that are maybe a little bit smaller, he has the strength, he has the finesse near the rim to do it. yeah, those were bad memories, but hey, we have Isaiah Thompson now, so it's all good things. But yeah, I love what I saw from Stu yesterday, especially near the basket. I liked also there were times where he was open on the 3-point line and chose to drive instead of just like pulling up. So I thought that was huge. And if he has like more confidence just playing in the paint, I think that's a huge step up for his game. What do you think, Wes?
I agree entirely. I think Wednesday night against the Heat is the like perfect Isaiah Stewart game. Okay. Because like you said, he wasn't just firing them up from three. We saw that a few times last year where he'd have a game where he'd take, you know, what, 6, 7, 8 threes. And sure, you know, he made 3 or 4 of them. That's technically a good percentage. But that's not really what you want Isaiah Stewart doing. So the fact that he was, you know, he was open, but he decided, no, this isn't the one. I'm going to drive and I'm going to get a good 2 points, right? That's great. I love that out of him. I love that he didn't focus on the post-up so much. If you look, I think there was only one time that I'm remembering where he did get the ball and took a few dribbles and did more of a traditional post-up. For the most part, all of his other buckets were either, you know, little tip-ins, or he got early low position, like on the high-low or on the fast break when Cade hit him, where it was pretty much get him the ball, turn, and go right up. Like, if he can do his work early, if he can limit his 3-point attempts to maybe 3 or 4 a game and be really aggressive when he does get the ball, attacking closeouts otherwise, I think that's, like, the perfect amalgamation of what you would hope Isaiah Stewart at the 4 looks like. Because of all that other stuff that he does, right? Like, he is a really good rebounder. He was a good rebounder for a 5. Now he's playing the 4. He's a great rebounder for a 4 if he can pull off this role successfully. And you look at him on the defensive end, you know, he's a switchable big. I still don't think you can say comfortably that I love the idea of him checking Jimmy Butler for 48 minutes, but one, you probably can't say that about a lot of people. And then two, he's still in a position where he shouldn't have to all that frequently. It should still be a bunch of switches. So I think that Miami Heat game is the mold. I think that's what you want out of Isaiah Stewart. And I'm really hoping that this is the guy that we get. Because, you know, there were some times in the preseason where it didn't really look like this. But, you know, Cade didn't have an awesome preseason either. And the big, you know, the bright lights show up and everyone decides that they're going to play basketball now. And that's just kind of how it is in the NBA. So, yeah, you know, I really loved what I saw from Stewart and Duren in the second half as well. I think both of them played off each other great. And I'm really fingers crossed, like, that this is going to work, because I think that was the closest we've gotten to a game where you watch it and you go, oh, that's going to work. You know, this two big experiment with Isaiah Stewart at the 4. So I was so excited. As great as Cade played, that was what got me the most pumped about last night's game, was just how decisive and assertive Isaiah Stewart looked, where I was like, oh my gosh, it might happen. This might be real. I was over the moon.
Yeah, and I mean, him and Duren getting 14 boards apiece is, like, yes, crazy. Like, I just can't say enough, like, how much that helps with second chance opportunities. And then add in Asar Thompson, who had 3 offensive rebounds himself. Duren and Stewart both had 6 apiece. So I think it's huge. And also with Stewart, like, connecting on 2 of his 3 3-point attempts, if he can hit at a decent rate, that alleviates some pressure from Asar. I know the shooting is a concern. He made that first 3-pointer last night, but that'll probably be a work in progress for him. So if Stu can help take up some of that pressure from him too, I think that's a positive.
Just to end the show here on a funny note, you mentioned Isaiah Stewart, you know, first basket of the season. He takes Kevin Love on a high-low action, hook shot, too small. Love it. Awesome. Just like we all predicted, right? That was going to be the first bucket. And then Asar Thompson's first NBA basket is Jimmy Butler daring him to shoot the three off the dribble, and he dots it between his eyes. What happened? You could have given me 100 guesses about how he would get his first basket. Not once would I have said what actually happened. That was incredible. The narrative of it, it was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Asar is going to be a better three-point shooter than we think. Like, coming in through the draft, like, a men's shot is definitely a concern. Like, I think Asar is in a much different spot than him. And it's going to be a work in progress, but I don't think it's going to be too bad. And Stewart, just the confidence that you have to do that too small after the first basket of a season is just incredible. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, highlight of the game. Awesome. Right there on play number one. But all right, guys, so we're going to wrap this up tonight. Thanks everyone who joined us live for hopping in, getting us all these questions. These were great. And everyone remember, all right, we're going to be hitting your podcast feeds every Friday morning now, pending some scheduling things, but every Friday morning, by and large, is where you can go and listen to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, wherever you listen to your podcast. Watch for that and watch for our early week calls for some mailbag questions in advance, too. So if you guys are listening to the podcast version, you guys can get your questions in as well. We want this to be as interactive as possible. So, Blake, I want to send it to you here to take us away on the opening the Pin Down podcast.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you everyone for joining in for the first episode of the Pin Down, and special thank you to Sean Corp, the managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And shout out to you guys for these great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you all next week, whether on your commute or live with us on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you. And Camille, I'm predicting the Pistons get their first win tomorrow. Hopefully. See you, everyone.